Campus FM presents a talk in the series Rediscovering the Grandmaster's Palace, entitled Bygone Views at the Palace. This talk is delivered by Mr. Sandro De Bono and is organized by the Office of the President.
Agenda's evening discussed a set of 22 largely neglected views painted according to current sources, which comment that these were all painted in 1887 by a little known Giovanni Bonello, who happens to be his grandfather. I shall also discuss meanings and values related to these works and propose them within a discourse of colonial display, where meaning had overtly political significance. You may rightly point out that I should have chosen the more important works of art at the palace. The works by Matteo Perezzaleccio, Leonardo Spada and others are here within these walls. Paintings and collections have been deposited here, and there is as yet a lot of research to be carried out on mankind's prime heritage site, which is the palace. I have instead chosen to focus on the work of what many might consider as by a second-rate painter compared to the big names which I have just mentioned. There is more than one reason behind my choice. It is first and foremost to interpret the palace as a historic building which we can easily falsify or render historic artificiality if we opt to highlight one value or historic period at the expense of the other. As curators, we have to empower accessibility, explain meanings and values, and empower our audiences to better understand the diversity of values, which are all of equal importance, irrespective of whether these are of high art, of fine art, or works by lesser-known artists or craftsmen. I shall now go quickly through these views, because they are quite high up, and I must here thank my friend Daniel Ciria for his courage, I must say. he's always been very kind. Whenever I ask for a photo, if he hasn't got one in his archives, he does his utmost. He goes even beyond his utmost to deliver what I would have asked him for. And here are the views which we will be discussing this evening. Now, the sequence follows the path, or it follows as if you're walking through the corridor from the entry point. This entry point, just outside the main door of this chamber, up to the Houses of Parliament, to the main steps leading to the chamber, the House of Parliament. And this is one of the views which are painted here. That's the first one. As you can see, there's not much that you can make out. It's a landscape with a hut built on an outcrop of rock. This is more familiar. This is Upper Baraka Gardens before the British had built a fort here on this site here. And there's also a customs house to your left. Another view, not much to comment about. It's a landscape with a distant village which you can make out at the back. A more familiar view, this is known as Porta del Monte. This was the entry point into Valletta from the harbor side. And it was demolished a few years before this lunette was painted in 1887, and a new gate was built instead, which is known as Victoria Gate. Another site, not much details to help you understand what or where this is, and a much more familiar site, Mdina. And you can see also the constructions which refer to the traditional horse races which are held in June. Another site, again, not too many details to help you understand what this is all about, and another more better known site, Verdala Castle, up at Busquets. Another site, this is probably Casa Leone. It's a building which was then close to Hamrun, on the outskirts of Hamrun, which was also used by the British administration. Hajar Inn, a very interesting site, not just because it is Hajar Inn, but for the purpose of the choice of subject matter. There's an interesting report dated 1885, which refers to extensive excavations just 2 years before this lunette was painted here at the palace. Another incognito. Not too many details, possibly in Malta, not much to go by. And a better known view. This is Mjar Harbour in Gozo, with Fort Chambray in the background. This is usually identified as Mdina Cathedral, the medieval cathedral in Mdina. We don't know much about how the cathedral looked, how it looked like, but what is interesting is that there is a coat of arms of the Order of St. John inserted on the door which leads into the building to your left. I can show you. That is a coat of arms of the Order of St. John. That is the coat of arms. Another quite well-known view of the citadel in Gozo, possibly in Malta. The state of conservation of these lunettes is also a concern. This is my first proposal. This could possibly be one of a series of buildings, of palaces built around Grand Harbour. This one has been identified as possibly having been sited close to the Marsa area. But as you can see, it's very difficult to complement the lunette with the illustration which I'm showing. There's a lot of artistic license in the way some of these scenes, particular scenes, have been carried out, have been executed. Another scene, possibly foreign, possibly British landscape, townhouse. Notice that the townhouse is in ruins. It's not a functional, or if it is, its condition is quite leaves much to be desired. So there's possibly an intent behind that. Another scene, not much help with that. Another possibly foreign scene. We shall be coming back to this because there are some interesting similarities to a particular site in England, which we can compare to. The last two, a ruin included, inserted within a landscape, quite a romantic type of landscape. A garden, possibly with a small structure, sort of a temple. Now, these past few years, the preparatory drawings of some of these particular lunettes have come to light. Most of these drawings are copied. There are only a few. Seven. Most of these preliminary drawings, which were prepared by Giovanni Bonello, are copied or inspired from a small group of drawings intended for lithography purposes, which were in turn produced, carried out by Michele Bellanti. And these date to the late 1840s and 50s. So we have the preparatory drawings which Giovanni Bonello used on site to paint some of these lunettes, not all, I shall explain why, some of these lunettes, which are almost a copy or a replica of drawings by Michele Bellanti. And you can see the lunette, the drawing underneath, highlighted also in white, is by Michele Bellanti, and the drawing, which is also squared, meaning that it had a purpose, it was used to paint the lunette proper, is by Bonello. You can see also the stains. That confirms that this was used as a reference piece, as a reference work, to paint these lunettes. Another two, St. Paul's Tower at St. Paul's Bay. The drawing underneath is by Michele Bellanti. The lunette is by Bonello. You can see that it's almost identical. Bonello is clearly referring to earlier works prepared by Bellanti. Another combination, Victoria Gate, the Bellanti entry to Valletta, the Bellanti drawing, and Bonello's version, which he prepared for his lunette. Not all of them refer to Bellanti's works. These obviously refer to probably other works which we don't know about so far. But Bonello could very easily have gone on site and drawn and prepared his cartoons, his drawings, his preparatory works on site. And that is the drawing for Gigantia and the lunette above. Same drawing and the lunette by Bonello. Another drawing. As you can notice, the drawing is much more fresh than the work proper, which means that these were probably repainted, redone, and they probably lost much of their freshness. That's another drawing. So this is already indicative. Now, Bonello was not just painting the Maltese views, but also the foreign views, which could have been an invention. That's Governor Linton Simmons. To conclude on the drawings by Bellanti, the works are roughly 43 by 21.5 centimeters, and they also have a title inscribed on each work. Michele Bellanti, for those of you who don't know much about Bellanti, was a painter and a lithographer who was well known for, amongst other works, his lithographs of Malta, but not only. As far as Giovanni Bonello is concerned, we don't know much about him. We know that he was an artist within the circle of Gianni, who was also quite known for his watercolors. We know a little bit more about Governor Sir John Linton Simmons, that's the chap, who was governor of Malta between 1884 and 1888. That is when these lunettes were painted. Born into a military family, Simmons served in the British North American colonies between 1839 and 1849. He was also involved with the Royal Engineers, a veteran of the Crimean War. He moved on to serve as Consul General with the Foreign Office in Warsaw in Poland, and was also military representative in Turkey before he became Governor of Malta in 1884. Following his post, once he gave up his post as Governor in Malta, he went to Rome as envoy, extraordinary envoy, and minister plenipotentiary to Pope Leo XIII, and that's when the English made an important political breakthrough with the Vatican. His daughter Blanche, 1857-58 to 1941, is the better known member of the family, and that is Blanche Linton Simmons. She's the lady seated in the middle with her two children. She's also quite known for her visitor's guidebook to the palace. I like to refer to her publication as a visitor's guidebook, entitled Description of the Governor's Palaces in Malta, of Valletta, Saint Antonio and Verdala, and Catalogue of the Pictures, which was published in 1887 with a later edition dated 1895. This publication was published in the same year when the Lunette paintings in the Armory Corridor were executed. This is nothing short of a catalogue of works of art, this particular publication. It's a catalogue of works of art at the palaces, which is cross-referenced with a metal plate hanging to each work of art bearing the same number as listed in Simmons' publication. Some of the paintings which were here at the palace carry a small metal plate with a number which does correspond to the numbering in Blanche Linton Simmons' publication, and that gives it more weight as a guidebook proper. The Linton Simmons may have well been the promoters of this commission of the Lunette paintings. A bequest of Malta views, known as the Orman bequest, presented by Blanche's daughter, Blanche Linton Orman, which we have also seen in the picture, in the photograph, was presented by Blanche's daughter, Blanche Linton Orman, to St. John's Museum, London, in 1941. And this confirms the Simmons' interest in Malta views. The acquisition records mention 9 pictures of Malta which were bequeathed to this museum, of which the one shown is one of the 9 pictures which the Simmons presented to St. John's Museum. It shows Verdala Castle. Almost all of these pictures, which form part of this bequest, and all of them are Malta views, date to 1887-1888, suggesting that the Simmons required these pictures as mementos of their posting to Malta shortly before they left the island. Records also mention moonlight pictures of the same site and interior views of the same. The bequest also mentions works by Gianni. The Simmons would thus have been the archetypal exemplar of Gianni's clients, a visiting Englishman wishing to surround himself with romantic souvenirs of his time in Malta. Indeed, it is not just Gianni's clients that conform to this typology. Bellanti's clients, Bellanti is the artist from whom Bonello got his sources, his inspiration for these lunettes. Bellanti's clients, as well as the Brockdorffs, another family of artists, both of them were producing lithographs and images in response to the same British demand handled by Gianni. Bonello may have been thus instructed to copy the Bellanti views, possibly the lithographies produced on the drawings shown. I've just shown the drawings. We don't know if the lithographies were produced on these drawings proper, which in any case may have been intended for a British public. The cover for the 1873 chromolithographed set of 10 street vendors printed by Leopoldo Brockdorff after original drawings ascribed to Michele Bellanti features the Anglican Cathedral of Malta on its front cover. There's a very interesting publication, which is a Souvenir de Malte, which includes a set of 10 street vendors, and there's the Anglican Cathedral of St. Paul on the cover of this publication. Now, what is interesting is that the Anglican Cathedral had been nicknamed the Devil's Den by the Maltese as early as 1841. And the British officer, Thomas Clemens Cons, in his letter to his daughter Fanny, also includes a literal transcription in his text, and I'll try to read it not in Maltese, but with an English pronunciation. Togbah tashitaw. This is what Clemens Kons wrote about the Anglican cathedral. So as you can see, there's a very specific British clientele who is after Malta views. They want to collect Malta views. They are very keen on taking mementos back with them to England. And it's more of a question of supply and demand. There's a demand, and there are artists, local artists, who are reacting to that demand. Three lithographs by Charles Frederick Brockdorff, one from the National Library collection in Malta, and another one at St. John's Museum in Clerkenwell in London, provide us with additional interesting information. Recent publications mention naval engagements as the subject of lunettes hanging along this corridor. We're referring to the armory corridor. The officer, the British officer, stands at the entrance to the tapestry chamber. And there are the two views very clearly show two different subjects as far as the lunettes are concerned. There's a landscape which is very similar to the one which survives on site, on this door, and there's a battle scene on the other. Now, Brockdorff passed away in 1850, so these could not have been produced before 1850, and that means 37 years before Bonello painted his lunettes. These lithographs, probably date to the 1830s. And the version at Clerkenwell, which is this version here, is the earlier of the two. What does this tell us about these lunettes? This comparison suggests that the original 18th century naval battle engagements, which were also probably similar to the ones which hang along the other two corridors, were removed at some point in time in the first half of the 19th century, possibly in the 1830s. And views, possibly romantic views, not views referring to specific sites, were painted instead. The one showing in the Brockdorff lithograph still survives. As you can see, the view is the one which still survives there. And possibly this particular view also dates to around 1830. It's a romantic scene. I must apologize, I skipped one of the slides. When we were going through, there was a slide which compares this lunette to an etching of Palmyra. Now, Palmyra is a very interesting archaeological site, which was very popular. Images of Palmyra were very popular in the late 18th, early 19th century, and they were also a source of inspiration to a number of artists. We have so far discussed the Malta views, at least those which are clearly identifiable. The set of 22 lunettes also includes views that, in my opinion, are neither decorative, as the ones we have just referred to here, nor local. Some of these have striking resemblances to sites, features, or structures in the United Kingdom. The octagonal structure in one of the lunettes features in British 19th century gardens. The detail, the black and white photograph included for the purposes of comparison, is a Grecian temple and stands at Dunerlan Park, Tunbridge Wells in Kent. The estate featuring in another lunette recalls Ashton Hall at Yorkshire. I'm not saying that this is Ashton Hall, but the relationship between the greenery and the structures suggest an English estate. It is rather difficult to pin down these views, some of which may have been prepared, drawn, and identified according to instructions by Linton Simmons, One in particular, however, can be identified with Pulteney Bridge in Bath. A bridge which was built in 1767 across the River Avon. This bridge was designed by Robert Adam and is one of only four bridges in the world with shops across the full span on both sides. So it's a 25% chance that we got it right here. Obviously, the others are much well known, so there is quite a strong argument in favor of this being Pulteney Bridge. The design is based on Palladio's rejected design for the Rialto Bridge in Florence, but subsequent interventions carried out in 1792 and a reconstruction of parts of it after the floods in 1799 and 1800 transformed the original structure. The western end pavilion on the south side was also demolished in 1903 to make way for a wider street. The early 19th century lithograph shows thatched roof structures to the left of Pulteney Bridge, as featuring in the Palace Lunette. You can see that the relationship between the houses included in this lithograph and the bridge, a three-arched structure, compares very well to the lunette. Besides that, the structure to your right, was built after 1792. So there's a good chance that the lunette, which describes Pulteney Bridge, is painted, is drawn on a pre 1790 drawing or painting, which we so far don't know much about. That is how Pulteney Bridge looks like today. What we can therefore conclude at this stage is far more complex than we could possibly envisage. The 22 lunettes were probably painted in two stages. The earliest set was probably decorative and painted in response to 19th century British taste for landscape, classicism, and ruin. The ruin is a very important structure in British gardens, and architects were expected to build a ruin as a feature in British gardens. These early 19th century lunettes replaced a number of as yet unidentified 18th century works featuring naval engagements, similar to the ones hanging in the other two corridors. A number of lunettes were painted later in 1887. This is where Giovanni Bonello comes into the picture, and feature both Malta views and sites probably in the United Kingdom. One of these, as you can see, can be quite convincingly identified. But why include Malta views in the Palace Armoury corridor? Why go for a combination of local and foreign, some clearly suggesting British sites and places? What is their significance? These are all the questions I've been asking for all these months and years. Why go for a combination of local and foreign, some clearly suggesting British sites and places? What is their significance? What do they stand for? And how would they relate to the objects and paintings in this area of the palace? A better understanding of the broader context of this corridor and the spaces adjacent to it can help us answer some of these questions. The armory corridor is the main link between the armory and the tapestry chamber, two key spaces within the historic fabric of the palace. Until 1853, the armory kept to its original function as a military store. It was still functional armory. With its subsequent transfer to Fort St. Elmo, a new entrance was constructed afterwards. And by 1889, we had clearly an itinerary which linked the armory to the tapestry chamber. What happened during the second half of the 19th century is that the armory became a museum, which one could visit. You would have guides as well. It was a fully functional museum, which by 1889 also included the tapestry chamber. So the armory corridor gained in importance because it was the link between the tapestry chamber and the armory. The then governor, Sir William Reed, turns the armory into a military museum. I would define it as a colonial military museum that builds on the image of medieval knighthood, valor and courage that the Knights of the Order of St. John represented. Sir Walter Scott's Ivanhoe and William Makepeace Thackeray's later sequel, Rebecca and Rowena, could be visualized thus in historic artifacts. The armory had all the necessary historic armor for such medieval styled events as the Eglinton Tournament of 1889. Before I move on to the next slide, this is a painting by Landseer, which shows Prince Albert and Queen Victoria dressed in costume, in medieval costume, for a fancy dress ball, a well-known fancy dress ball, which was organized in May 1842, known as the Ball Costume. As you can see, it's quite close to a fetish almost. These are two very interesting images. The armor is not a suit of armor. It's an oven or a sort of a chimney piece. No, you would put logs through that small door gate. No? And you would heat. You would have heat in your sitting room thanks to this heater. And the lithograph shows the Eglinton Tournament of 1839. It's a very famous event, which was well planned, well organized. It happened on an estate in Scotland, and the higher echelons of the British aristocracy participated in a medieval style tournament wearing medieval or armor, possibly also from the armory here at the palace. So as you can well imagine, knighthood was in fashion. A continuum between the Order of St. John as a military institution and the British governorship is emphasized throughout. These are images of the armory during the British period. Lithographs and photographic material show wooden mannequins carrying shields with the coat of arms of British governors of the islands, and regimental banners are photographed with elaborate displays of historic armor pieces. The image shows the colors of the Royal Malta Fancy Bills. The title to this lithograph goes, "Photographed in the armory of the Palace of the Grand Master, now the Governor's Palace." As you can see, there's an intent at creating a political link between the Order of St. John and the British colonial authorities. We are the legitimate heirs to the Order of St. John. We are the modern knights, the modern version. And there is a continuum between what they did, what they achieved, and what we are trying to achieve. The Guida di Sicilia e Malta, published in 1886, defines Valletta as a military depot and fortress. I quote, "Il governo inglese ne ha fatto una stazione di guerra e di deposito di primo ordine, e la sua abilità per la flotta del Mediterraneo è senza ordine." The British government has turned Malta into a military outpost of the highest rank, of the highest order. And its ability and its potential as far as the fleet, as the Mediterranean fleet is concerned, is undisputed. The armory is defined as a military museum, un museo strategico. The military aspect is not, however, emphasized at the expense of the hospitalier role of the Order of St. John. These are other views. You can see historic armor pieces carrying coat of arms of British governors. And that's the armory. Maiolica jars, as you can see in this image, were also exhibited alongside armor pieces in ways which scholars have labeled as unrelated accretions. Rather than accretions, Maiolica jars represented the continuum between the hospitalier role of the Order of St. John and the hospitalier capability of the Maltese Islands through the British colonial rule, which earned Malta's nickname as the nurse of the Mediterranean. We can refer to, for example, a publication dated 1906 by the Reverend Albert MacKinnon, Malta, the Nurse of the Mediterranean, that's the title, and I hear, quote, Malta has assumed the role of a nurse. I ought perhaps to say resumed, for when Philippe of Villiers de l'Isle Adam took possession of this island in 1521, I'm purposely quoting the wrong date here, at the head of the Hospitallers, the Knights of St. John of Jerusalem, one of the first things he did was to build a hospital. With the Crimean War and Florence Nightingale, nursing became a new profession for women, and Malta had a foremost share in those epoch-making days, when women found a rallying place beside the flag as well as men. So there's an intended political argument, political program, which is very keen on twinning the Order of St. John through its multifaceted or twin dimension with the British intent. The palace corridors and the armory corridor in particular, as embellished by the British colonial authorities, is an intended extension to the intended pro-colonial political imagery. By 1858, 50 suits of armor had been placed in the corridor, the armory corridor, and other corridors, to represent the history of the Order of St. John in Malta. Between 1859 and 1862, the firm Darmani Marble Works was commissioned to cover the three corridors in marble. The iconographical program, design, and layout is indeed particular and well chosen. I didn't include a slide here. It's best to view this imagery in situ, just 2 minutes away, 1 minute away. The coat of arms of particular grandmasters are inserted within roundels at different points, and these feature coat of arms of grandmasters of the Order of St. John. This intended colonial twinning of imagery is best represented by three coat of arms inlaid in the Paris corridor, which links the main spiral staircase to the Ambassador Hall, this corridor just behind that wall at the back. The coat of arms inlaid in this particular corridor included belong to Malta, featuring the national colors, the Royal Coat of Arms of Great Britain, and the coat of arms of Grandmaster Jean de La Valette. The three coat of arms along this corridor are the Royal Coat of Arms, the national colors, the Malta colors, and the coat of arms of Grandmaster Jean de La Valette. So there is a clear intent also at bridging heroism, the Great Siege, with what the British are trying to work out here in Malta. The iconographical program is improved later in 1884 when Governor Borton commissioned two commemorative plaques in marble from the Darmani Marble Works firm to record the Grand Masters of the Order of St. John who reigned in Malta. I'm referring to the marble ledger stone at the entrance, at the end of this spiral staircase, of the spiral main staircase here. And the ledger stone, which includes all the British governors at the top of the stairs. By 1887, when the lunettes under discussion were commissioned and completed, this overtly colonial political imagery is all in place. Contemporary descriptions of the corridors, including the armory corridor, are also revealing. That's an old photo of the armory corridor. In 1869, Joe Fowler Townsend, in his English Handbook of Malta, describes the palace corridors as the most striking features of the palace. And I quote, "They are paved with marble flooring and ornamented along their sides by a series of figures of the Grand Masters in full armor." He's referring to the suits of armor. "Arranged in chronological order from the first founder," so the first, according to him, the first Grand Master when the order was founded in Jerusalem, "down to the present British governor." Goodwin's description in his Guide to the Maltese Islands includes similar observations. The inlaid marble mosaics on either side of the fireplace in this room are very fine. He's referring to the to this hall here, to the state dining room. "Along the corridors are ranged figures of knights and men-at-arms in full armor, bearing on their shields escutcheons in chronological order, commencing with that of the first Grand Master and ending with that of the present governor." So two authors stating the same thing. It's not a coincidence. These escutcheons still survive. They were previously deposited in the storage depots at the storage depot of the National Museum of Fine Arts and are now transferred back to the armory where we thought they should be. This is an old photo of the corridor. You can see what the authors are referring to are the coat of arms behind the suits of armor. That's another view. And the coat of arms are now clearly visible. They are one on top of each other. Now, those are the coat of arms when we found them way back a few years ago. They still survive. You can see two coat of arms which belong to British governors and the coat of arms of Grandmaster Lacassière. So what the authors are saying here can be confirmed with the real thing. You can also see in Jerusalem. It's a coat of arm which a coat of arms which belongs to one of the Grand Masters before the order came to Malta. And this iconographical program continued well into the 20th century. This is Governor Duquesne's coat of arms, who was governor of Malta between 1927 and 1931. So this is this intended iconographical program, political program, does not refer just to the 18th, to the 19th century, but continues well into the 20th century. The series of views commissioned to Giovanni Bonello in 1887 are thus part of an intended sequence of colonial iconography, which could be experienced through the main staircase of the armory, the original entrance to the armory built by Governor Reed, along the armory and the main corridors of the palace. The choice of Malta sites depicted in the lunettes rests on well-tested imagery developed over time for a British clientele keen on romantic imagery of the island. The emphasis, as you can well see, is on fortifications and the seats of power. The medieval style, as representative of Britishness, features in the representation of the Gothic Cathedral, believed by many to be the old cathedral of Mdina. Hajar in temples, a favorite attraction for British visitors. You can see a troop of British visitors. The detail is uplifted from a diary at the Maritime Museum, which also belongs to the National Collection, who are having tea at Hajar in. Hajar in temples, a favorite attraction for British visitors, features as an excavated site, also representing the politics of British imperial interest in fostering archaeology as a colonial prerequisite. In 1885, 2 years before these lunettes were completed, further excavations were carried out and a lengthy report with elaborate plans, sections and views published. So there's a historic background to the choice affected here.
The sites with an overtly British flavor or connection are twinned to these Malta views to suggest imperial complementarity. Malta features as part of a bigger whole, which is empire. Indeed, visitors to the palace were encouraged to contextualize Malta within the British Empire, yet highlighting the military and hospitalier values of the Knights of the Order of St. John, and their continued endorsement by the British colonial authorities. Now, if I can suggest a walkthrough of how you would have one could have experienced these spaces, this is the original entrance, the entrance built by Governor Reed to the armory. You can see the display of weapons, historic weapons, all hung along the wall. Go up these flight of steps to the armory, which would look something like this photograph. No, you have a combination of twinning of armor pieces with maiolica jars and maiolica pieces, the military and the hospitalier role. Out, down through the flight of steps into the armory corridor, where you have the scenes, the combination of scenes, British allegorical scenes, the few that were painted in the early 19th century with Malta views. On your way, you would experience these on your way to the tapestry chamber. And now I conclude. This is yet another layer of historical significance which the palace holds. It is Malta's prime historical site. It is this very historical layering which makes it an ideal candidate to represent the history of these islands through the history of its capital city, Valletta. Thank you.
You have just listened to a talk in the series Rediscovering the Grandmaster's Palace, entitled Bygone Views at the Palace. This talk was delivered by Mr. Sandro De Bono and was organized by the Office of the President.